shit they want that. Jump back when I kiss myself like James Brown. You got to lay down, it's not the safe sound, it's not the playground. We hot, we spray rounds, shot the plane down. We got the place around it. You held hostage to this get down shit. J.D. Madlib, who I get down with. Sound sicker than Chief Rocket and Brown. Look, I put it down when I get around my out of town.
Now everybody, let's gather round. Cause all we want to do is,
yeah,
just get on down, man. I like the sound, bro. I know you do too. Cause on the down low, I'm fucking with you.
Turn your music up.
And here we are, and here you are, and here it's another Pedal Revolutionary show. It's another Thursday. You're probably riding another bicycle, going over yet another pothole. We are going to have a show with kind of exploding with solidarity today. We're going to be talking to some people out on the other side, the right side of Canada. You love them. They're people in Toronto, I'll tell you. My mom's from Toronto. I have a lot of roots in Ontario, and I was born actually in Northern Ontario. That's not Thunder Bay, for those of you wondering what Northern Ontario consists of. It's actually north of Thunder Bay in the great white abyss that is Hudson's Bay. So, I mean, it's a, it makes, I forget, you know, when time passes and I don't talk to people who are in Toronto, how really so supine and relaxed we are in comparison. So they're totally chopping at the bit. They're excited. They're going to be on the show. We have Streets Are For People are going to be on the show with us today. And they just got off a roller coaster ride called Not One More Dollar to Car Culture. They were hammering at the doors of the Ontario legislature with a large car-shaped petition. We're also going to be talking to Chemez. We're going to be touching base with a business that does a lot of bike-oriented pickups and things like that, also out in Toronto, called La Palette, a little bistro. And we're going to be getting a traffic report from the Urban Repair Squad, who are notorious throughout the interneted world for painting DIY bicycle lanes where none had previously existed, oftentimes in hot pink. So that's very cool. Anyway, my name is Ifni. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. That's UBC's Indigenous radio station. And I'm joined by my colleague David, who is manfully operating the switchboard. So at any rate, if you want to call in during the show, you're more than welcome to. It's 604 UBC CITR. Otherwise, we're going to play a little song in dedication to legislators everywhere. It's called Turn on the Heat, and it's by Horace Height and his Californians, otherwise known as Horace Height and his Musical Nights from 1901. Welcome back. That was Turn Up the Heat. So should be inspiring to all of you when you think about your local politician. Think of that song. And I'm sorry, it wasn't 1901. How foolish of me. That was 1923. And I guess when Horace Height started out, he was with the musical, his musical nights. He's very possessive. And then he got rid of them for his Californians. So anyway, again, this is the Pedal Revolutionary Show. And we have a revolutionary online through the miracle of modern technology, we're speaking with Toronto. Shemez, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. How about you?
I'm good. Now, I get this impression, and I don't know you at all. This is the first time we've spoken, right? You can attest to that?
Yes.
Okay. You probably eat really healthy.
I do.
Yeah, because you sound really like high energy and stuff like that, and I know you're in the restaurant business in a sense. Is that correct?
Exactly. I do run a restaurant in a little neighborhood called Kensington Market.
Oh, you know, my mother grew up there.
Oh, it's amazing. I love this neighborhood. It's like it's what everyone wants a neighborhood to be. You know, neighbors say hello to each other. There's all sorts of different shops and residents living here, and it's like it's a microcosm. It's a classic small-scale, mixed-use little neighborhood. It's what a lot of places in the world look like in medieval times.
Is that Edith Piaf we can hear in the background?
Yes, it is a little French bistro that I'm running.
Whoa! Okay, now, what makes the neighborhood great?
Well, it's an old neighborhood in the city of Toronto. It goes back 100 mm-hmm. years when all these little residential streets started having a little push cart economy, and people sold, rag pickers sold things off their front lawn, and pretty soon little shacks developed out front, and then it turned into a place where you can get fruit sellers and fishmongers hawking their wares, as well as vintage clothes and cafe, bar, restaurant, and lots of residents live here too. It's right in the heart of the city between Chinatown and Little Italy.
And not many car dealerships out in Kensington Market.
No. Although the place is congested with cars often enough, it is a really small, mixed-use, human-scale place, and because the streets are so narrow, people rule the streets here. As cyclists, there is no wrong way down the one-way street of Augusta, and pedestrians take over the streets, and cars have to sort of proceed with caution. Road signs and traffic limits mean nothing here. People mm-hmm. just have to look each other in the eye to make sure that no one gets hurt.
Interesting. And now, from what I understand, too, there's something, you guys do it like a car-free Sunday, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a few years ago when I first met Kelsey, who you're probably going to talk to in a little while, we thought it'd be fun to do a good deed for the world by taking over a bunch of parking spots on the street. So we plugged the meters with coins and gave out free soup and fixed bikes. And by the end of the day, a samba band showed up and there were 300 people dancing in the streets. And all the cars had to sort of turn away from our block and let us party. And then that was meant to be a one-off, and it grew. People said, what are you going to do next? So mm-hmm. we talked to lots of people. We talked to all the merchants. We talked to the residents. We talked to the city, and we came up with this scheme where we can close the streets to cars once a month. We got everyone to agree to it, and it is so much fun. Mm. It's amazing because the streets become a playground. It becomes the extension of people's living rooms. So what's usually hidden behind closed doors, like yoga classes and dance lessons, come out right into the middle of the street. And mm-hmm. kids play, and everyone can get around. It's an amazing feeling, and it's something that happens in countries all over the world.
Mm-hmm. And in Vancouver as well. Now, one of the things I think is really interesting for people who are listening who are maybe living in communities that don't have car-free days, when you first, I'm assuming at some point you guys had to talk to local, like the city hall. What was the reception like, and what did you guys do to prepare for that?
Well, we gave deputations at City Hall. We talked to different people within City Hall. What we did is we went door to door and asked people if they'd like to try this thing out, and we got signatures. And we just got people talking about it, and we crafted the plan until we whittled it down to something that everyone could sign off on. Now, there were still, of course, a lot of naysayers, but we reached a tipping point where the majority of people thought, okay, let's try it out. Let's dip our toe in the water. Let's see. We're not talking about permanently pedestrianizing our neighborhood. We're talking about having the streets just look and work a little differently on some mm-hmm. days of the year.
Now, what kind of feedback have you gotten from the merchants? And were they, I'm also interested in their initial reactions as well, but I'm also interested to know if they were surprised by what happened.
Yeah, well, they definitely were. And the interesting thing here is, too, since we do it on a regular and repeated basis, each one is sort of informs the next. Each one's practice for the next one. It's not about having a big community festival where you want to turn your neighborhood into an exhibition playground mm-hmm. and you set up stages and whatnot. No, what we're saying is that the street itself is the stage, and all sorts of opportunities for exchange and encounter happen. Mm-hmm. And since it's repeated again and again, what happens is you have a festive day, not a festival. There's no stages, there's no lights, there's no nothing like that. There's lots of opportunity for spontaneous meeting and greeting, and have giant games of chess and Scrabble, and strangers end up friends by the end of the day. It can get really fun. People often end up doing what we call the grocery drop.
Where they just drop their groceries and get involved?
Yeah.
Where there's like a
dance party going on, and they drop their groceries and play and end up somewhere else that they wouldn't have expected to be.
So it's kind of a BYO fun.
Yes, exactly.
Right on. And of course, we should remind everyone that Toronto is the home of free dance lessons, which I recall seeing. Have you ever seen those folks around?
Yeah, there's you know what? Within the grid sterility of a big, mean, smoggy city, there's lots of fun little things going on just like that.
And for people who don't know, Free Dance Lessons is I guess we would call them philanthropists of the groove, and they have a little sign that says Free Dance Lessons, and they just pop it down somewhere, and they have a ghetto blaster, and they put on some tunes, and they just start dancing, and they encourage the people around them to kind of join in the celebration. And they've done this, I know they've done this on train platforms during rush hour when people are usually, they've got what I call bus face, you know, where people have that face that's totally emotionless and they're all in their own little worlds and yet touching elbows with one another and yet not entirely inhabiting the same space on a cosmic level. But the free dance lessons folks tend to kind of cut through that with a nice little warm butter knife and get people to, you know.
It's completely surreal. They melt like any analness that people might have just with their sincerity and spirit of fun.
They melt any analness. Such a nice image. Anyway, well, listen, I wanted to ask you, too, about the place that we're calling you at, La Palette, because, I mean, it seems like it's somehow connected to the bike community.
Well, you know what? It really is. I've never owned a car in my life, and I never will. I use a rickshaw, a pedicab from India. It's pedal-powered. It's a giant tricycle, and I can move 1,000 pounds on this thing. I can go to liquor store, beer store, get 10 cases, and that's something I truly believe in. And since I got my first tricycle as a delivery vehicle for the restaurant, I've also got a couple of different cargo bikes, and often I'll give people free rides on it just for laughs. But I use that as a practical means of getting around.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely we're connected to the bicycle. And now that we're getting deeper into things too, we're starting to work more and more with local food, for example. So we've got we take inspiration from the old world, but apply it to amazing local ingredients.
Mm-hmm. So, do you do some pickups and things like that by bicycle of local ingredients, or how does that?
Well, it is a marketplace. Most of our fresh produce we get from around here. But what we're starting to do is build relationships with farmers, which is the most amazing thing. Or we'll go to a farmer's market. So on a given day, every the meat special and the fish special will feature 100% produce from a local farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. What's the lunch special today at La Palette?
We don't open for lunch.
Oh, ooh!
But for example, the fish special we've got right now is rainbow trout from Georgian Bay, and we serve it with what we call a risotto. But it's not a risotto made with rice; it's made with barley and Ontario cheddar, aged Ontario cheddar. And then sometimes it's nice to have a little squeeze of lemon or something with your fish. Instead of lemon, we use cranberry.
Hmm.
And then we've got some wilted local greens as well. So everything is 100% from nearby.
So the 100-mile diet?
Ish, although we stretch it beyond the 100-mile diet. Every now and then we'll get caribou from Nunavut that only the locals there are allowed to. It's part of their economy. Only they're allowed to hunt it and sell it. So we try and forge connections like that as well when we break the local rule.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And, it's not everything that we do local, but at the same time, we've managed to switch from Alberta beef to Ontario beef, and some of the game that we used to get, like wild boar from BC, now we found a place in Ontario that has some good wild boar. So
noticed.
We try and make that shift. It's hard when you have a business that classically can be really wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's something to make an effort with.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, when you're organizing community festivals, you help people who wouldn't normally know each other get to know each other. There's something amazing going on across the street where the guy who runs the variety store wanted a tree out front, and he talked to some other people, and they knew where to get a free tree. And right now I'm watching it happen as
really?
We've been having this conversation for the last hour.
Are they erecting a tree?
A few neighbors have gotten together, and they've all been sledgehammering away at the pavement. And now it's deep enough, and they're planting the tree in the pavement there. And this is, this is something that's really great to see, too. The city often enough is just too behind the times and too full of bureaucracy to fix the city, but it's nice to see people taking it into their own hands and getting out there and using sledgehammers to create the place they want to live.
I always like to see people taking the initiative, too. I worry sometimes that people wait for you know, institutions to kind of fix problems for them, but it's always nice when people get excited.
Yeah,
and
you know, like when you do things like that together, well, that's something, that's the kind of stuff that Jane Jacobs would be proud of, where you have eyes on the street nurturing the environment, the people
now,
around them.
Now, who's Jane Jacobs? Is she another Torontonian?
I believe so. She actually she did a lot of great work in urban planning thinking, and she did actually spend the last years of her life here in Toronto, and she is a sort of a hero for lots of people, and people credit her for having stopped the Spadina Expressway, where in some horrific plan people were going to dissect the downtown core and destroy neighborhoods with highway overpasses. That was all stopped. And
oh, we hear that. We have that going on right now. Well, listen, if people ever want to drop by La Palette, where do they go?
Oh, they come to Kensington Market, to Augusta Avenue. We're close to College Street.
Okay. Well, listen, Shemez, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. And I guess maybe you can, if you can, take a picture of this tree going up.
I'll try.
Okay. Excellent.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You take care, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So that was, again, Shemez calling, talking to us from Toronto, La Palette. And we're going to listen to a song called Street of Dreams by one of my favorite strange fellows, or actually, he's got one of the best pairs of glasses in the musical world. His name is Esquivel. Oh, man. That man has more instruments than a wheel has spokes. That's incredible. That's Esquivel. And if you don't have anything in your closet by him, you should probably go get something, because he is a genre unto himself. You're listening again to the Pedal Revolutionary Show, and we're going to be talking to Streets Are for People here in a couple minutes. I just want to read you one of their proclamations. Their website is streetsareforpeople.org, and this is a little bit of text that they put together. It says, since 2002, Streets Are for People has used costumes, trumpets, and big tricycles to liberate the commons from the mundane rule of that deadly beast, the automobile. We deliver the straight-up message that cars suck. While creating the city we all want to live in, a comfortable place where laughter, romance, and dancing children fill the streets. We are, in essence, a gang, a bicycle gang, and ours is the hilarious revolution. Holding parties in reclaimed parking spots, parading on main streets, and occupying road construction sites to host concerts, games, and socials. We also work with communities and the city to make projects like Pedestrian Sundays come to life. We love turning concrete slabs into gardens, transforming dead cars into planters and petitions, creating messages of hope, taking back streets for people. We look forward to meeting kids of all ages. Come join the gang, send us an email, and let us know you're in. Our mission, to engage citizens and governments through creative and playful street actions, to demonstrate the absurdity of our auto-addicted culture, to open dialogue about alternative visions for our city streets, to create and inspire collaborative projects which continue to push the agenda of a livable city and a sustainable future. Sounds extremely far-fetched and yet so attractive. So we're going to be talking to them in a couple minutes. In the meantime, let's listen to a song called That Old Gang of Mine from 1923 by Bill Murray and Ed Small.
Say you're looking good. What brings you down to the old neighborhood? Just looking for the best pal that I ever had. I never thought that I'd want them so bad. Gee, but I'd give the world to see that old gang of mine. I can't forget that old quartet that sang Sweet Adeline. Goodbye forever, old fellows and gals. Goodbye forever, old sweethearts and pals. God bless them, gee, but I'd give the world to see that old gang of mine.
Say, Eddie, wouldn't it make you feel good to have the gang back in our old neighborhood?
It sure would. You know, when I look at those houses unchanged by the years, in my throat there's a lump and my eyes fill with tears. Take a peek at that lamppost, the old pump, and that stoop. Say, can't you remember us kids in a group? There were Shorty and Red.
And Skinny and Mike and the rich kid with the ball-bearing skates and a bike.
Gee, those were happy days. You remember the parties and dances? That's why we didn't notice the years drifting by. And the first thing we knew, we were all 21.
But the gangs got together in fight or in fun.
And then came the war, the crowds in the street, the blast of the bugle, the tramp of the feet. And the gang, those pals of yours and mine, were the first of the bunch to fall into line. Say, what's the matter, buddy? There's a tear in your eye.
I can't help it, Bill. I don't know a face in the crowd going by.
Gee, but I'd give the world to see that old gang of mine. I can't forget that old quartet that sang Sweet Adeline. Goodbye forever, old fellows and gals. Goodbye forever, old sweethearts and pals. God bless them, gee, but I'd give the world to see that old gang of mine.
On the last Friday of the month, the territorial mating call of the indigenous local cyclists is heard echoing through downtown Vancouver. Thousands of cyclists have once again reclaimed the streets and scared belligerent motorists. But now, you wonder what is next. The night is too young, and you're feeling a little frisky. After all, there are only so many car tires you can peel in a day. Well, we have the solution. Velofusion Bicycle Dance Party. Burlesque, bands, dancing, DJs, and pirated movies. The last Friday of the month after Critical Mass. Come one, come all for a little primal rowdiness. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. The Answer Club.
And welcome back to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. That was a song, That Old Gang of Mine, from 1923. And speaking of gangs, we have some members of this bicycle gang in Toronto who are coming to us who have this funky idea that streets are apparently for people, not for large hurtling pieces of metal, which, I mean, I guess I can relate to that idea on some level. But are you guys there? Can you hear us?
I can.
Okay, we got Michael J. Kelsey, can you hear us?
Yep, I can hear you too.
Oh my God. Okay, this is unprecedented. This is the first successful conference call we've ever done. Everybody,
yay.
Yay, congratulations.
we have tight buns and we have a few brains kicking around too. Okay, so welcome to the show, you guys.
I'm doing a conference call. It's brilliant.
Well, it's so lovely to have you here with us. I know you've all been very, very busy. You just kind of got off the roller coaster ride and did a big, you did a big metal petition.
Yeah.
We've
been pushing it around the streets of Toronto for months now.
Do you want to tell everybody about this?
Why don't you start, Kelsey?
Well, certainly could. Our petition car first hit the streets on Car Free Day, actually, September 22nd of this past fall of 2007. And so the aim of the petition car was to open people's eyes to the role that the car plays in our city, how it just kind of bulldozes over all of our streets and neighborhoods, and the role that our government has played in helping promote this car culture, both in funding car culture through automobile industry, through their choices, what they choose to support in terms of infrastructure. And so we've been at various pedestrian Sundays, which Shemez was speaking to earlier, at Car Free Day, mm-hmm. Various street events, had people reading and signing our petition car, which, Michael J., maybe you want to describe what it looks like?
Yeah, I think it was a Pontiac. Was it? No, this one wasn't an Unfire. I can't remember what kind of car it was.
It was a Grand Am? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And Grand Am not, as somebody wrote on it. We painted it all white. It belonged to our friend John Alexander, and he divorced himself from it and gave it to us. So we just painted it all white and came up with a petition to write on the cover, and now it's got over 4,000 signatures on it, with a lot of added commentary as well.
He divorced.
Really, really fun.
He divorced his car. Now, was there a ceremony for that?
There was a bit of a ceremony, not so much of a ceremony, but he did have proper papers drawn up. Yeah, I think it was irreconcilable differences.
Yeah, I should think so. And so there was some kind of unhoneymoon, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. Apparently his mom was delighted. She never got along with her.
Yeah.
The car never got along with the mother-in-law?
No, the mother-in-law
exactly.
never got along with the car.
Exactly, and vice versa.
Right. Wow. And now...
So on the windshield of this car, amid the thousands of signatures and comments about what cars are doing to ruin our cities and country, right huge on the windshield, you see the words, "We the undersigned do hereby demand that not one more dollar go to promote, support, or perpetuate car culture. We want bike lanes, public transit, and a train system. We want our public space back. We want local food, clean air, sustainable industry, and a livable future for our children, and an end to oil wars. We want to dance in the street, and we want a government that values life over money." So that's the statement that made people grin with glee and scribble their names on this car.
Wow. Now, tell me about the experience of dragging this thing around.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much, because it only takes about four people, really, to push it, you know?
And you have
somebody sitting in the front steering and on the brakes, just in case. But whenever we, you know, like a Sunday was Earth Day, mm-hmm. Right. Tuesday was Earth Day, but last Sunday there was a big rally, and we got a little street closed off for a festival. And at the end of the day, we pushed the car through the big parade with several hundred people in the street, and that was really fun. But at the end of the day, when we're actually pushing it back to Kensington in traffic, And it's bumper-to-bumper traffic on Queen Street. And here we are with four people pushing the car. We've got Shemez riding his rickshaw hooked up to another pull rickshaw, almost like a train, right? Mm-hmm. With all the, you know, games and all these instruments and all the kind of stuff. Kelsey had another rickshaw full of, I think the best, what was it, Kelsey? It was an accordion.
Oh, right behind me was these giant angel wings, a massive accordion, and then a sign that had came from one of the activities during the day that said, certified hypnotist can help you quit driving.
Yeah. So when people see that and we're pushing this stuff along just in regular traffic, and we're not holding anybody up because traffic's going at a crawl anyway. It's just
traffic holds itself
creating
up.
Any pollution. People just exactly. grin from ear to ear, and they honk in approval, and you know, people just really love it.
Mm. Wow. Now, let me ask you both, I guess in sequence, what brought you to this point in your lives that you're pushing this this decorated
dead.
Car around in the streets of your
we're
city?
We're pushing this dead cut technology around?
Yeah, this dinosaur. You know, we could call it a whole bunch of epithets, but...
Well, maybe I'll go first. I was in the business of pushing dead technology for a number of years.
Oh.
My father was in the car business for 30 years. Including about 10 years of having his own dealership. And I actually, so that I could pay those bastards at UBC my tuition fees and exorbitant fees for books, and living at Salish House at Totem Park, I sold cars in Medicine Alberta for my summer job.
Hmm.
And did you like how I squeezed in there that I'm UBC alumni?
Yeah, and that they're bastards.
yeah, because come on, school's a ripoff. Everybody knows that. Schools for chumps, as we're fond of saying.
Well, you know, information wants to be free, right? So
exactly, exactly. But yeah, so you know, as I got more awareness of what's going on in the world and why, and really, really started to look at, especially when 9/11 happened and this sort of war, and really bringing it down to okay, what's at the root of all this evil. And it was around then that I met Kelsey, and she really, really hit me to a lot of the idea of the car being a root cause and car culture, and it really started to open up for me. And so my whole motivation is kind of a atonement for the sins of the past, if you will.
Mm. Kelsey?
And myself, too. I mean, I think it started from, probably that tender age of 17, 18, when you start just getting so full of energy and really aware of what's going on in the world around you. And at the time, I actually found myself, I was living overseas in Spain, and I was just bubbling over with this need to be part of fixing things. Of, you know, you're just starting to be aware of world issues and how broken systems are and what human beings as a race are doing to this planet we call home. And I was feeling completely stifled by the fact that I lived in a place that was quite old-fashioned and quite backwards and was, you know, just sort of beginning to enjoy the all the benefits of modern technology and the 21st century. And so I was feeling really stifled and unable to scream out about the need for change. And so shortly after that, when I finally did come home, I ended up in Toronto and met Shemez and Michael J. shortly after that. And it was just a bit of an explosion of this need to react to all of the, you know, all of the disasters of city planning and the way the government set up that you see all around you. So I had actually started working at La Palette, the restaurant that Shemez owns. I started off as an employee, and about 3 days later, we were a gang, and already starting to plot away at the revolution.
Mm. And let's maybe talk... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, too, that, I mean, it all starts off with just observing the city around you, but I think it was undeniable for all of us, the more you looked around, that everything that was broken about people not knowing each other, not caring about each other, about these broken neighborhoods that didn't have any human connection to them, the more you studied it, it was undeniable that the automobile was the root cause of all that destruction, all that inhumanity in the cities.
And you guys kind of put together this organization, Streets Are for People. I'm assuming that you're some of the ringleaders. What are streets are for people designed to do, and what kind of activities do you guys get up to?
Well, I guess the number one thing would be we're trying to get people to kick the habit. You know, driving is a habit. It's a filthy, disgusting habit, and it's killing everybody.
And Kelsey, you wanted to add something to that.
Well, I've been thinking about it more and more that we're kind of like people's imagination. We kind of pushed their sense of imagination because it's so easy to think, well, I mean, we need our cars. That's the way the city works. We're stuck in it. And we're trying to make people stretch that vision and say, well, you don't need it. That just happens to be what we're stuck with right now because the other systems aren't sufficient enough for people to get around by train between cities, to rely on public transit to get from the suburbs downtown, or, you know, the streets are unsafe for cyclists to bike to work and back. But that doesn't mean that we're stuck with the automobile. So both on a large scale of beginning to imagine how our city and our province, in fact, our entire country and our economy can function without so much reliance on the automobile, from that right down to the small scale of the pedestrian Sundays that Shemez was talking about earlier, you know, we made people imagine what our street would be like without cars and made it happen, brought it to life.
Yeah, you give them a little glimpse of it, of the absurdity of it. You know, when we set up and have a breakfast in a parking meter spot, you know, you pay for the parking meter spot, right? Mm-hmm. You put the little parking ticket on your bicycle, it's a vehicle, and we set up tables and chairs and have a very, you know, delightful breakfast, all dressed like ladies and gentlemen. And it just makes people look and go, what? What's that? But it sort of calls to the absurdity of, why is this all this public space being used for cars? So we give them the positive vision of what it could be, so they don't have to imagine it so hard.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm also, I feel like we should maybe revisit to the car petition. Can you tell me about the experience of actually delivering it? What was that like for you guys?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Go ahead, Kelsey.
Because I think the way there, we were very, very much in our element. We had trumpets and drums and fiddles, a whole band full of clowns and merrymakers helping push this car. We had a beautiful little guest of honor, this tree on top of the car, and a whole crowd of smiling faces. We were escorted by lovely police officers who were corking the intersections for us. As we, with all this excitement, were delivering, finally, since September 22nd, we've been collecting signatures, we were finally taking it to the Ontario Legislative Assembly to be presented in front of the provincial government. And very much in our element. We arrived at Queen's Park, so you see this big, huge, beautiful piece of architecture where all these important decisions get made behind the doors of. And Michael Jay had been working very closely with Rosario Marchese, our member of provincial parliament.
Well, not very closely. I hounded him until he agreed to do it.
That's intimate, though. That's a different kind of intimacy, but it's still, you know, you were at his heels, so that's...
Yeah. Well, and what we had to do is they couldn't accept the petition as it was written on the windshield. It has to be in a certain formality of language that the government can accept. So we took that opportunity to rewrite it in a very serious manner, with a full of the, you know, whereas 26% of our economy is done this, whereas 440 deaths a year in the city of Toronto from air pollution, whereas all these facts and figures.
Our culture has destroyed and alienated our communities and dominated our public space.
Yeah. And then we came up with 10 action points that the government could actually take, you know, like a ban on car advertisements, just like they did to cigarettes, an education program on educating the public of the ill effects of the automobile dependency, different things like this. And so our minister came out to receive the petition from the crowd, and, you know, it was great. Everybody read the petition, and he made a few words for the media, and we got some media attention, which is good too.
And we donned him with the superhero cape that he deserved for taking on this. I mean, it's
really,
if you think of the role of a
politician has to be a superhero
representative. Mm-hmm. These are some pretty radical suggestions that we're making, that he was then to stand up and present in front of the entire provincial government.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we do have to give him a huge thank you for for taking the courage to read these radical suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
So then we all went in. We all went into the through the tiny little rat hole of a back door, through the basement, through a couple of security checks, and then finally up these back stairs. And then
you're not allowed to bring a piece of paper. You're not allowed to bring any phone or technology. You're not allowed to say anything or clap or do anything. You are not allowed to partake in any way in the government. You are
there. There was probably about 30 of us all went in there, and it was, you know, everyone's bubbling with excitement because for most of us, it's the first time we'd ever even been in the building and actually been there in person during the provincial legislature. And this is also probably the, you know, in terms of the government hierarchy of power, this is the furthest we'd pushed our agenda so far in terms of, you know, directly confronting the level of government. So it was quite exciting. And we sat through the question period and about 20 minutes of preliminary and hugely important issues that were getting, you know, cut off after 2 minutes of discussion and sloughed off, next issue, please. And then came the petition time, and 90% of the room got up and left and went out for a coffee.
Yeah, everybody who didn't have a petition to read left.
No.
Yeah, so there were maybe 5 ministers who heard the petitions. The rest all got up and left,
so
including
the
Speaker of the House.
So the part where, like, people have come to bring their concerns in person to their elected representatives, everybody had to go take a pee break.
No, it's the end of the day, right? It's the end of the day, so everybody leaves early.
Format.
Everybody goes home.
What were you saying, Kelsey?
It's the one format for a member of the public to pursue their democratic right to be heard by the provincial government. And, you know, you're not just showing up and demanding something. You have to go through this whole formal process of getting your MPP to represent you, to write it in the proper language, and to collect a minimum number of signatures before they'll even look at you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've put a lot of effort into this already just to get to the point to have a petition read there, and they all got up and left.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite literally sickening.
Yeah,
it was a really beautiful building, and I was very proud of myself for not throwing up all over it.
Now, the five people who heard the petition, did they stay because they didn't know they were supposed to leave, or did they stay because
they
knew
you were
coming?
No, there were other petitions to be read. So each minister had a different petition to read. That's the only reason why they stayed, to read their petition.
To each other.
Yeah.
So I move that we barricade the doors next time. Instead of standing in the balcony and listening, we go down and barricade the doors from the outside so they can't leave.
Yeah.
Or have a bigger petition outside so that they know if they leave, they have to face even more petitions. So it's just better to get it over with and get, you know. I think that's you know what? What a great story, you guys. Where's the petition now?
The formal petition or the car?
Kensington Market. Okay. And it is awaiting to be turned into a garden.
Yay!
Yay.
And the real
for the first pedestrian Sunday, we'll make a big deal out of having the whole top removed and then filling it with soil and replanting it and repainting it.
We'll have to send you some pictures of the car garden that we made here. Then we should have like an online collaborative gallery of alternative uses for dinosaurs.
That sounds
absolutely
great.
Because you know what? More and more every day, people are giving them up and offering them.
And what do we do with them? We should just make them pretty.
Just have to keep building.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you guys, thank you so much for telling us all about your heart-rending experience. And I know that, Michael J., you are in another gang called the New Kings, and we're going to actually play a song from you all. But yeah, thanks so much, and keep doing great work. And if people want to find out more information about you, they should go to streetsareforpeople.org.
All right, I'd like to dedicate it to the BC Klets, if I may.
Oh, of course you may. Yes, you may. And actually, perfect, because we're going to play a Street Fighter.
Ah, there we go.
So here we go. Here's the New Kings of Street Fighter, BC Klets. Listen up. One, two, three, four.
bicicletta. La vita qui is something better. I'm rolling all alone, wishing my bicicletta. Giving my life to raise on debt. I'm not known by in high style. The boys in the cars all point and laugh at me. I'm not known by in high style. Nothing but smiles from the girls in the passenger seat. Tranquility. We find the time to take it slow, without the rush and the noise, the crush of the cars and the go, go.
That was the New Kings with a great song called Street Fighter, and that was going out to the Bicyclettes. And today we've been talking about Streets Are for People and car culture and French bistros, and we've got a bicycle traffic report today, but it's coming from the other side of Canada, and it's being brought to us by Urban Repair. So we've got Agent Alvin on the line. Alvin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, right here.
How you doing?
Good, I'm doing great.
Thank you for being out there in the main streets. Can you let us know where you are and what it's looking like?
Well, right now I'm just sitting down on my bike here on College Street, and a lot of potholes, but lots of bikes are out. The weather's been good. And, yeah, it looks like we need to do a little urban repair to keep things on the up and up.
Uh-huh.
But apart from that, the people are happy. They're riding their bikes. The bike lanes are packed, And despite what the politicians are saying, you know, bikes rule.
Are they, you know what, they're getting less and less brave about saying things that come up against bike culture. I think bike people are making a lot of noise these days.
Absolutely.
Tell us about Urban Repair. What the heck?
Well, it's actually a slight correction. It's Urban Repair Squad, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. It's all about Urban Repair.
Okay.
And it's a group that started out about a couple of years ago, and we basically decided to skip the middleman and put in bike lanes ourselves.
Uh-huh.
And we started basically putting bike lanes where they were most needed, where there were the most accidents, like on major roads in Toronto, like Bloor Street, College Street, Dundas Street, right in the downtown where people really appreciated them.
Mm-hmm.
And that created a bit of a stir.
So I guess, Urban Repair Squad, so you guys fly in formation. And from what I understand in Toronto, it's a bit challenging because you've got some great bike routes, but they don't connect with one another in places. Is that right?
No, it's absolutely true. It's kind of like you go for a little while, it stops, then it starts again, and it's pretty obvious that it's all up to the merchants to decide where the bike lanes go in, and depending how much guts the politicians have, you get a bike lane or you don't get one. And that's when we decided to say, well, that's not the way it should go. Safety comes first.
Mm.
And we decided just to say, okay, it's got to start happening now. We're not going to wait 10 years. We can do it for $25, not $25,000.
$25.
We can do it right now.
$25 being the cost of a can of paint, or?
That's right.
And I know too that there have been some very serious incidents that, you know, where like cyclists have been struck by trucks and things like that, and so there is certainly an urgency that maybe is hard to communicate. And
absolutely.
What other kinds of things does the Urban Repair Squad do?
Well, we also have looked at things like bike boxes, which are very popular in New York right now. They've installed about 60 in the last year or so. That's something we're starting to work on right now. We've done sharrows recently.
You've done what?
Like sharrows.
Okay.
Like just bike markings.
Okay.
Drivers know there's lots of bikes coming through.
Mm. Now, what was you mentioned bike boxes. What, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, it's a very important concept. And this it directly addresses the right turning of trucks and any kind of motor vehicle, which is really dangerous for cyclists getting cut off when a car comes up from behind and passes to the right of front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the bike box kind of prevents that, especially at intersections. And what you do is, and there's lots of examples of this, you can Google bike boxes, you see them all over the place, and it basically creates a safe space at the front of an intersection in front of the cars where the bikes line up across the whole lane, one or two lanes, and then when the light changes, they go through first, and the traffic has to follow behind.
Oh, yeah,
that prevents anybody from passing.
And they've just
cutting in front.
They've just implemented some of these in Portland as well.
Exactly. And New York's put in 60 within like the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And in Toronto, they're like thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time for that. We had at least 10 cyclists in the last 5 years die from this kind of thing where people have turned, and especially trucks, and they've just run people over. And like there's no time to waste.
For people who want to see one, if you're in Vancouver, you can head down to Union and Main. We do have a bike box there, and you can practice in it. It's kind of fun. If you want to turn left onto Main Street from the Adnack Bike Route, you get to camp out in this little, nicely, clearly marked box. Well, listen, Alvin, it's lovely hearing what the word is on the street, and I don't want to say keep up the good work, because you and I both know that it's implicit.
That's right.
And listen, I hope you have a safe ride home, and thank you so much.
Thank you, and to everybody out there, enjoy the lovely climate and weather, and we're taking a lot of inspiration from what people are out there in the West Coast, and we love you for it.
Aww.
And we're inspired by it.
Aww.
And we wish you a safe ride.
That's so nice to hear.
Right.
Alvin, we appreciate you saying that, and awesome. All solidarity to you.
Take care.
Take care. So we're coming up to the end of another Pedal Revolutionary show. We're going to play one more song to take us out. Coming up next, we got Stereoscopic Redoubt, hosted by DJ Darren G. And the last song we're going to hear, another little special by Esquivel, and this is called one for my baby and one more for the road.